Welcome to Conversations with Catalysts. I'm your host, Jeremy West.
Today I have with me my first guest who is not technically a coach by trade. Instead, I have a philosopher who happens to get paid for telling jokes. So I guess he's actually, you would say you're a comedian, wouldn't you, Mike Kaplan?
Thank you for having me. And yeah, I think technically by some official measure, I work as a comedian. That is how I spend a lot of my time. Though I do like to tell people what to do.
You like to tell people what to do you, Mike? Fantastic. So, Mike Kaplan, can you please tell my audience who is Mike Kaplan and how did you end up in the world of comedy?
Sure. I'm a human being. Started life in New Jersey and my parents were music teachers. I was made to play the violin from a very young age and didn't love it, but in high school I started teaching myself guitar, which was made a lot easier by all of the knowledge I had of music theory and, you know, playing a stringed instrument for years and years. So I loved playing the guitar. I started writing songs. A lot of them were funny, either on purpose or otherwise. And then I was looking for places when I turned around 21 to perform my music, and I found a comedy club. I was in the Boston area going to school. So I found a place called the Comedy Studio, and I asked them if I could come play my funny songs there. And they said they could give me 5 minutes. And so I played a couple real short songs and talked a little bit in between. And then little by little, over the past 20 plus years, I started expanding the amount of talking and decreasing the amount of playing the guitar that I did in most of my comedy sets. But I think that's as short an answer as you'll get from me as to how I got into comedy for sure.
Fantastic. Now, I'll give a little bit of I'll tell the three reasons that I have invited you on, despite the fact that my podcast is called Jeremy Chats with Coaches, and you're not exactly a coach. So number one is that I was definitely inspired to do this podcast by your podcast, Broccoli and Ice Cream. I don't know how similar the format actually feels in general, but I've definitely stolen the last two questions from you. I always ask the same last two questions that you ask. But yeah, you generally have on comedians, sometimes other types of artists. And so I said, why don't I have on Mike, because you've inspired this podcast. But the second reason would be that you, within your comedy, I have noticed, whether you've noticed it or not, I'm sure you have, that you have a lot of sort of spiritual themes and things that to me feel like self-development type themes, definitely within your podcast as well. And then the third reason was just a good excuse to talk for an hour to my favorite comedian.
Thank you. Very kind of you to say, very generous for all that. I'm happy for I've always enjoyed interacting with you online. I'm glad for you to be doing this project that seems constructive and helpful for the world and the people in it. So yeah, I'm happy to be here. And yeah, I guess, I mean, to speak to what you have noticed in my comedy, I appreciate it. Certainly on my podcast, my goal is to, you know, talk to people about the creative work they do and the joy they find in life. And so that, I feel like that does often lead to, you know, valuable, meaningful conversations, often insights. And, you know, just, I learn a lot about people and other ways of being. And so in the, you know, the past 20 plus years that I've been doing comedy, I have certainly grown and changed. And I would say certainly over the last decade or so, for various reasons, I have in my own, you know, sort of personal life, which then has informed my comedy, you know, discovered things like meditation and certain Buddhist authors and other spiritual texts and other, you know, not specifically spiritual, but sort of life enhancing, like the, you know, perhaps books and authors from the self-help. I met my girlfriend in the past decade, and she has offered a great amount of spiritual sustenance to my existence and also like pointed me to many of the teachers and authors and texts that I have. Now it seems like I can't imagine a time that I didn't, you know, that I hadn't heard of Pema Chodron or Byron Katie or Brené Brown or various other folks. But yeah, I'm happy to, you know, be constantly learning and then sharing whatever I can with the world in, you know, in comedic form and or in podcastic form.
Fantastic. A question somebody asked me many years ago when we were just standing at work waiting for customers, and she said, if you could bring more of any one thing into the world, what would it be? And that stuck out to me as a way. It took me a few minutes, so I'll give you a minute while I'm talking to think of what it would be for me. But it struck me as a way to encapsulate really quickly a bit of your purpose in life. Mike Kaplan, if you could bring more of any one thing into the world, what would it be?
Peanut butter. What if that was it?
Yes.
Thank you. Was that correct? Did I get it? No, I would say.
Yeah, that means that you're really worldly, because wasn't that created by a black man?
Yeah, I'm an ally. And my sincere answer is, I mean, I wish it could be more than one thing, but, you know, kindness is, I guess, one of the first things that springs to mind. I think at first I thought maybe joy, but I would say, you know, the more kindness there is, I think that will secretly also increase the levels of joy within the people being kind and within the recipients of the kindness. So yeah, I would say
kindness. Fantastic. And then obviously, as we've just talked a little bit, you have quite an interest in self-development and, you know, self-help and all that kind of stuff. So if you were to say, what would be sort of the core philosophy behind your approach to life and work, and what's your core philosophy in life, Mike?
Oh, thanks for asking. I guess I would say, I mean, a practice that really helps me out is gratitude, like whether in the form of, you know, gratitude journaling, which is something that I, you know, I do sort of a morning pages style, you know, writing, or I do it in typing form on a website called 750words.com. I know a lot of people, there are some people who subscribe to, like, it's good to do it longhand, but for myself, I'll do that sometimes, but I often will just spend, you know, I'll wake up, and the first things that I do, like beyond, you know, brushing my teeth and such, are usually before that I'll meditate. And there's all kinds of different meditations that I'll listen to, different guides and different styles and different kinds of meditation. But that, and some of them are gratitude based, or, you know, metta or mindfulness. And then usually right after that, I'll get up and brush my teeth and such, and then do this writing, which often begins as a gratitude. You know, sometimes I will just stream of consciousness write and see what comes out. Sometimes I'll start with, I'll write my girlfriend an email, or my mom, or another friend. Sometimes, you know, I'd say most often I will just start naming people and things and experiences and ideas that I am grateful for, and just sort of, you know, pinballing all around. Like if I think of, you know, one person, and I'm like, oh, and that person like introduced me to this band, I'm like, oh, and then all of these other bands and other artists and other, you know, and it's like a really nice, you know, in contrast to sometimes in the past, and sometimes still, if I slip and like look at, I don't know, the news or social media or my email earlier. Like one of the books that my girlfriend brought into my life is by a man named Alan Cohen. And it's like every day is a page a day, inspirational, motivational, spiritual, like lesson or an allegory. And one of them is about the formative minutes of the day as compared to the formative years of the life. And the idea that, you know, in your first couple of years alive, those are very important for like the rest of your life, speaking nutritionally and physically, mentally. And so that if each day is like that as well, the formative minutes of the day, Alan Cohen says, are valuable to, you know, for people. Some people start with prayer or meditation or exercise or just quiet, or, you know, whatever it might be. So I have definitely found when I do that, and when I spend it in a a place of gratitude, that it's like, it's a very meaningful and helpful way for me to start the day. And like, I think my experience with like at least the study of or the analysis of gratitude in this way, I listened years ago to it was on NPR. It was like a radio show, but it was like maybe a combination of TED Talks or something. I think it was called like the TED Power Hour, unless that's not a real thing. And then it wasn't that. But I remember specifically, it was the first time that I'd heard of or heard the voice of Thich Nhat Hanh and, you know, Buddhist monk who just died recently, I think in his early 90s, and was, you know, nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize by Martin Luther King Jr. and just like, you know, a prolific, beautiful writer. And but on, in this particular talk, I remember hearing him say this specific thing that the happiest people are the most grateful people, or that the most grateful people are the happiest people. And it's not because people who they're grateful for the things that make them happy. It's that the gratitude specifically makes them happy, that, you know, when we focus on what we have, you know, what we're grateful for, what we're happy is in our life, that's time that we're not spending thinking about what we don't have, what we lack, what we wish we had, what we're afraid of. Just like every, you know, every experience that I've had, every year that I've been alive, every moment with my girlfriend or my family or my friends, or getting to do comedy or music and, you know, listening to it, playing it, just being, you know, being here and being present. Like there's always, you know, every once in a while I'll like look at, you know, like some of my peers or people who like maybe I started out with in comedy, who there are various people who are accomplishing things that I would love to accomplish. And also I would not trade my life for theirs, because for everything that I might wish I had in my life, there's, you know, so many beautiful, meaningful, powerful things that are in my life that I'm like, good. I want what I have. There's so many things that I have that I didn't have that I wanted before, but now it's, you know, it's like a trick that we play on ourselves sometimes, you know, where we're like, I want to get to that horizon. And then when we get there, another horizon, you know, the old horizon trap. Mm-hmm. But it can, you know, sometimes be nice to like turn around or look down, look back and be like, wow, look at all those horizons I've already traversed. Super grateful for, you know, infinite horizons thus far, and the one that continues to like be, you know, right beneath my feet or within me right now. But yeah, so I would say core practice, gratitude, which I think is also, I mean, connected to the kindness that I mentioned before. So maybe that as well. It's a tie. I can't pick between my two children, gratitude and kindness, who are perhaps flip sides of a similar coin or a multi-sided die, perhaps.
Yeah, 100%. I think the more grateful you are, the more kind you're probably going to be as well. And that's my first thing in the, what's meant to be my first thing in the morning always, is actually a gratitude meditation. And I've mentioned to you before, but I'll mention it to the listeners, that you're in my head whenever I'm doing something else before meditation, because there's one episode of where you were asking a guest if they meditated, and they said, yeah, no, I always mean to, but I go, oh, I'll meditate after I do this, I'll meditate after I do that. And you responded, no, meditate before that. And so that's, your voice pops into my head every time I'm doing something else saying, no, meditate before that. So that was actually the first time I thought maybe that what you do is a little bit of a coach to me.
That makes sense.
So okay, aside from those things that you've just shared with me with the gratitude and the meditation, could you maybe share another story about some area in your life where, and you can talk about psychedelics as well if you'd like to, which you haven't mentioned yet, but I know has been a big part of that in your life. Could you share something that you've done within self-development or some practice has made a significant difference in your life, or you've seen it make a significant difference in someone else's life?
Yeah, I'll probably get to psychedelics. They've gotten to me, but
that's what taught you to be kind, right? According to Keith Malley.
I appreciate it. So here's a couple things. One, there's a book that my girlfriend read and then she loved it and recommended it to me and I loved it. And we think everyone could benefit from this book called You're Not Listening by a woman named Kate Murphy. And Kate Murphy.
You're not listening.
Okay,
go on.
I see. We're talking on a, I'm like, look, I'm being very sincere here and great job. Now, as your coach, I'll say, don't make that joke again right now. But joke noted, I'll stipulate to the fact that you were very funny and it was very good. So the book is about how we could all be better listeners, that there's all these sort of ideas about, you know, how to be an active listener, how to appear like you're listening, or things that they recommend, like mirroring back to people what they say. And that there's a lot of myths that, like, that it's actually, you know, maybe simpler, but not as easy in our, you know, go society, in our, you know, society where people are rewarded for like speaking more than listening, you know? And, but that there's such a, like, you know, in my own experience, I'll speak for myself while you listen. You're doing a great job listening. I haven't always been, I mean, I'm still working on being a better listener. Like, you know, on my podcast, my goal is always to invite, you know, the guests to share as much of themselves as possible. And my favorite episodes sometimes are ones where I hardly say anything. And, you know, I get to, as a comedian, like talk for my job and share as much as I want in the confines of that. But it's just really, you know, like perhaps these are cliches or ancient wisdom or whatever, the idea that like if you're talking, you're not learning, you know, like maybe you can say a thing and surprise yourself, but definitely other people know things that you don't more than you know things that you don't. Like specifically, like, you know, I mean, I'm a straight, cisgender, white, American, male, you know, I'm many categories of privileged that, you know, my society and my, like, my whole life has been like, oh yeah, me-centered, you know? And, you know, we all, hopefully, we are all, in some ways, quote, me-centered. You're all centered around me. And it's weird to say that it's fascinating to be like, oh, other people, other experiences. Like, you know, my family was very supportive of me and loved me, and I was an only child and an only grandchild. And like, I was, you know, as children are, I think, hopefully intended to be, like, the center of attention for a while, you know, you're formulating into a human and developing like a sense of who you are. But like, you know, eventually, you know, we learn that we're all a part of this sort of, you know, larger tapestry. And so that one aspect of the answer to your question, I'd say, is that I have been working on like, not necessarily saying everything that I think immediately in every situation. You know, obviously if I'm in, you know, talking with somebody or in a group of people, or where it's, you know, where it's not me performing, I do my best to try and, you know, if it seems like there are people who are quieter, like, you know, my girlfriend in particular, she isn't quiet, but she doesn't want to like steamroll people in a conversation, you know, like she is a wonderful listener and a wonderful conversationalist, especially when, you know, there are people who are good listeners engaging her, where if you have two good listeners, then they both do a great job listening to each other. And if you have two people who are not, then you have people who are gonna, you know, maybe both be advocating for themselves talking, and that'll be okay too. But it's just been, I'm focusing on that in my own experience. And so, you know, like, if you're a person out there who feels, and, you know, this is not necessarily a gendered thing, though, in, you know, in our society, it does seem like, you know, men are socialized to blah, 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 and women have been socialized the other way, even though, like, weirdly, the stereotype from, if you listen to many male comedians, like, man, women, my girlfriend, they won't stop talking. It's like, interesting. you won't stop talking about how your girlfriend won't stop talking. That is a fascinating turnaround. But so I'm thinking about that. The other piece of what I'll share right here is I love advice columns. I love advice podcasts. I read and listen to tons. There's Dan Savage's podcast is one of my favorites. I listen to Dear Prudence and read that column. And there's one called Captain Awkward. There's The Ethicist. There's Social Cues in the New York Times, which is one of my favorites. There's a podcast called Dear Therapists, which is really just so cathartic and heartwarming. And like, you know, these two real therapists like do basically a session with a person who has written or called in with an issue. And it's just, man, I love the genre or like the field of advice giving. And that's, you know, in part what I was part of what I was alluding to. And I'm like, I have an impulse, you know, going back, I don't know, however long, if anyone says something to me, like that could be a challenge or a problem or something they're working on or ruminating on. And my first instinct historically has been to be like, well, you know what you should do? Well, here's what I would do, you know? I feel like a lot of us have ideas of what we think another person would, could, or should do. And they aren't always asking us for those things. And so it's been really valuable. Like my girlfriend has been a large help and just and all these other ways of seeing like sometimes. So here's I forget where this came from. But I mean, I think this will be appropriate for your show in specific, that sometimes when people are coming to you, you know, and sharing something that they're going through, sometimes they're looking for a coach, someone to help them figure out what to do. Sometimes they're looking for a cheerleader, just someone to kind of, you know, be there and big up them as opposed to offer like different ideas of what to do. And sometimes people are looking for just silence, like so. Cheerleader, coach, or silence. Or another way, I don't know if this is the exact same paradigm, I've heard it put, sometimes you want to be helped, heard, or hugged. And which I think might correspond to roughly coach, cheerleader, and silence. And so I love advice columns, maybe because, you know, optimally, I like when people who want advice are asking for it and then receiving it. So another, you know, thing that I've been working on is trying to ascertain, you know, either directly by communicating about it or as in indirectly if need be, like when I'm talking to a friend or a loved one or, you know, someone, like, are they coming to me for advice? Are they coming to me just to share? You know, what does the person want and what can I offer, be it just whether it's my ear or my mouth? Because I've been, you know, throughout a lot of my life leading with my mouth. And often, you know, there's two ears, so they've got even more power in the power of silence there. But yeah, so I'd say those are a couple things, and I'm happy to get into the psychedelic piece of it, but I'll leave it there for right now.
So I would say, first up, I listened to your podcast, and I've noticed you are a very good listener. I've noticed a huge difference between when you are the interviewer and then every 100th episode where you have someone else interview you?
Yeah, thereabouts. I think we've done that. Yes.
Yeah. And there's a huge difference. You, like me, like myself, you do like to talk and have do you still have your podcast called The Faucet?
I do. I began it during the, you know, the lockdown phase of the pandemic. And so I did it a lot more regularly then, and now it doesn't come out with a specific regular schedule, but it does offer an outlet for me to just, you know, spout off a stream of consciousness out of the faucet that is me.
So I think you might be similar to me. I just was traveling with my family of origin in Europe last year, and my dad likes silence. And I think he may have pointed this out, that I process things and I do my thinking sort of out loud. That's how I figure out, is by actually talking things through. So there's a little bit of a clash in our communication styles there. But yeah, definitely, I don't know if it's something that you've learned over the years, but when I hear you interviewing people, you don't talk a lot. You let them talk a lot. You definitely have learned that, if that's something that you weren't doing before. Somebody, though, one of our listeners, KV, had a little suggestion that you mentioned a few times there, Rini. And here, let's listen to KV.
While Kaplan is talking about listening, I thought I'd leave a voice message. I've really enjoyed the talk for the last 15 minutes. It's a show that I'm not ashamed to play out loud for strangers to hear. That's always nice on stereo. So I'm looking forward to Jeremy West's next podcast, where he's going to be interviewing your girlfriend, Mr. Kaplan, my Q Kaplan. She sounds like somebody he needs to interview. Yeah, you're welcome.
That's really fun. That's delightful. Thank you, KV. In fact, my girlfriend, who I share a home and life with, is with me currently.
Hi, Rini.
She waves and there. Okay, so she's been on the podcast now, but she's been listening and said she'll consider it. But
I don't know if I should be flattered or just acknowledge that perhaps the joke is that I could either confirm or deny that he is a good listener. Is that what it was?
I was wondering that, but also I thought maybe my thought was that KV was saying that Mike has learned so much from you that maybe I should be interviewing you.
That was my sincere takeaway as well. That, yeah, I mean, why keep listening to me when you can go direct to the source? I learned all these things from another person. You listen to me.
But yeah, that means you must have been listening if you learned those things from me.
It certainly did. I mean, it's so interesting, like my own, seeing these different aspects or different, you know, points in my life and my own development where, like, I know that I was different at a time. And, you know, obviously, like, there was something about me, something about each other that attracted us to each other. And it wasn't that I was this, you know, just a malleable, you know, ball of mush that she's like, this could be a shape of a listening good boyfriend, you know. But there was early on, I forget exactly, we met and started being together in 2016. And so it was sometime, like, I'd say within a year, the first year or two that I was away for shows in California, and Rini was still working at a job that she had to stand on her feet all day. And it wasn't, you know, it was, I don't know if you know about capitalism, but it's, and she, I remember I like in the morning, I like messaged her. I don't know if it was a text or a voicemail. But I think maybe a text that was just like, I hope you're having a great day. And I was like, I think that's pretty good. That's a nice thing to say. But as it turned out, she confirms it is a nice thing to say. And also, like, she wasn't having the best day. And it led to us having a conversation eventually where she let me know that for her, and for a lot of people, but definitely for her, she said that being asked questions was a way that made her feel more cared for, because saying like, hope you're having a great day. Like if she's like, but I'm not, like there was no, yeah, she didn't want to disappoint me. There was no invitation for her actual experience. I was not expressing curiosity. I was just like, you know, checking a box, being like, I want to make sure you're okay. I'm okay. We're okay. And just say you're okay and we'll be okay. But at this, and I remember part of the conversation involved like me not even really intellectually understanding what the difference was between like, how was your day? And tell me about your day. Like, you know, not with that tone necessarily, but just that a question is inviting. A question is like open-ended and, you know, spacious. But at the time I was just like, I don't totally get it, but I'll do it. And you know, the next time, like maybe the next day or whatever, I was like, how are you doing? How is your day? And like, it's so fascinating how it can, like, I wasn't doing it as a joke, but I was at first kind of just, you know, going through the motion of it. I'm like, I will, like, cause I love her and I want to make her feel good. And if she says, if it's no difference to you, if it's no difference to me, Mike, if it's no difference to me, whether I say, however I say a thing about your day, then absolutely, I'll do the one that you want. 100%. Like, do you know, Jeremy, the platinum rule?
Yes, I thought I came up with it, but then I've heard other people talk about, yeah, because I was like, Jesus is not noticing that some people don't want to be treated the same way that you want to be treated. But yeah, tell us the platinum rule, Mike.
Yeah, my understanding of it is, instead of do unto others as you would have them do unto you, is do unto others as they would have you do unto them. Do, you know, don't treat others the way you want to be treated. Treat others the way they want to be treated. And in order to do that, sometimes it's important to be curious and investigate and be inquisitive. And like, certainly if it's somebody in your life where you can be like, hey, how would you like to be treated? How can I care for you? And so in this particular instance, questions were a very easy way for us to do it. And so now I do my best to remember that and implement it. And I think it's gotten to a point where every once in a while, like there might be some people out there who don't want, you know, especially if it's like maybe sometimes I'll meet a new person and I'll just like ask them a lot of questions because I'm curious and I want to get to know them. And at some point they'll be like, this feels like an interrogation. I'm like, oh, do you want me to talk? And I can let the beast out.
That used to happen to me all the time when I was an Uber driver, but I'm pretty sure that what they wanted when they said this feels like an interrogation was silence.
I mean, certainly in an Uber, it's nice to have that selection where, you know, I don't know if they have that everywhere, but to be like, what do you want? You know, sometimes people do like.
Oh, is that in the app?
Yeah.
It wasn't back when I drove, and it was annoying as the driver. I was like, do they want me to get a conversation going, or do they just want to be silent when they weren't?
Understood. Reading's the best. That's in conclusion.
Yeah. In conclusion. So I was going to say, because I dabble in comedy. But I have done stand-up. And when I just said, I'm completely serious that I thought that I came up with the platinum rule. I don't think I called it that. But I'm sure that I must have heard it somewhere and then thought it was my own idea. So that whole thing where it's the cardinal rule or whatever of stand-up comedy that you never take anything from anyone else. I'm like, but I don't know if my thoughts are original or if I got it from somewhere else. I always think it was my own idea.
I mean, these things happen. And I mean, for all of us, there is almost always no way to know that we, you know, like, first of all, like, we didn't invent the language, you know, we came into this world, we didn't create the society. I'm talking about like us individually, you and me, and or any individual person. And like, we're all working with the same, you know, cultural ingredients and, you know, linguistic ingredients. And, you know, and there is parallel thinking. Like, it's quite possible that you did come up with it on your own, as did others. Like, people invented calculus in two different places around the same time.
And also the Darwin's theory. Someone else was about to publish. He'd stuck it in a drawer. And
yeah. Like, it certainly happens with jokes pretty frequently every once in a while. You know, I write a lot of jokes. They get out there in the world. Sometimes somebody will be like, hey, that reminds me of blank's joke from could be 30 years earlier, could be 5 years later. And as long as, you know, the goal for us is to, you know, not actively, purposefully do something that, you know, that takes from somebody else's work, intending to do that as opposed to intending to be as innovative and original and creative and unique as we possibly can, yeah, then like it happens to the best of us.
So you're the best. I've heard you talk about this before, and you've mentioned it in this conversation, that your parents were really good at letting you know how good you were and making you feel really good. And I've heard you mention that when you started comedy, you had an unearned level of confidence and things like that. So, first question, do you ever experience self-doubt?
That's a good question. I mean, I would say Probably, yes. And I probably, I think it's like a really delicate balance, this spectrum where, yes, I do say that I started comedy with like a level of delusional self-confidence that eventually was tempered by, sort of increasing awareness and greater accuracy of, what I was, how I was actually, connecting and being perceived. And so I would say, sometimes I think about this thing from the Talmud where a rabbi said, have one piece of paper in your pocket that says, or he had said that he did this, that he has a piece of paper that says, this world was created for you, and the other pocket that says, you are nothing but ash and dust. And, sort of put more simply, like, if you're feeling down, if you're like, oh man, I'm nothing, remember that you're also everything. You're the center of your own experience. You're, the main character of your story in this life. And if your head's a little too big, if you're like, yeah, I'm the greatest, be like, remember, you're also nothing. You're ash and dust in the grandest scheme of the thing. You're the tiniest speck in the tiniest, like corner of the space-time continuum. Billions of years surround you. Yeah, you're gonna live 100 years, maybe. And it's sort of this seesaw or pendulum that, perhaps this is like akin to what the Buddhists call the middle path, where it's like you don't want to be, it's not everything permanent and it's also not nothing complete, I mean, they call it emptiness, but they just refer to that as like, the emptiness that everything has, everything is empty of a permanent sort of intrinsic ultimate being, an ultimate self. And I feel like maybe I feel, every once in a while, perhaps I'll swing to the other side of the spectrum, but I do think that my, familial and cultural conditioning has, a lot for better and occasionally for otherwise really bolstered the this world was created for you side of the spectrum for me, which I'm very grateful for. But I've had to cultivate, not doubt, but also, like a more sometimes like realistic view of what's going on. So, yeah, I mean, short answer, let me take away all that. Short answer, yes. I mean, let's say this. I just gave you an answer and I was like, I'm like, no self-doubt. And I'm like, wait a second. Hold on. Maybe sometimes self-doubt. Yeah, okay, yeah, right here, a little bit of self-doubt as to whether I experience self-doubt. Does that make sense?
It does. So maybe I'll go. What about this? Do you, what, especially in creating your new routines and all of that, when you're writing your comedy, do you experience lack of motivation ever? And if so, how do you push through that and how do you push through that?
Sure. I mean, I wonder if this won't be helpful, but the answer is almost never.
Oh,
But
yeah. No, that's good.
thankfully, I mean,
Do
here's the
you
thing.
think there's a reason for that? Is that do, are you really disciplined or you just really feel motivated all the time to be doing that?
There's a quote by the writer W. Somerset Maugham that's, I'll paraphrase. He says, I only sit down to write when inspiration strikes. Fortunately, it strikes every morning at 9 o'clock on the dot. And so I think that I am disciplined. And I think that, like, when I started doing comedy and I wasn't, as successful, as accomplished, as funny, as good as anything, like, it was my just doing it that, getting the reps in that made me, get better. Like, swimming against a current and becoming
What
stronger.
is your, do you sit down and write no matter whether you feel like you're inspired, or do you do more of the pulling out the, I know you have a recorder, like a audio recorder, pulling that out all the time, and is that more your process of just throughout the day whenever anything strikes you as funny?
That is, it is the latter. Like, I do have, so I have this recorder that I carry around, and then sometimes if it's not handy, I will like text myself ideas as well and eventually put them in the recorder. And eventually, like, actually just earlier today, my recorder was basically full. Like, there are different folders, and each one of them can hold up to like 200 ideas. and most of the folders were full. So I'm like, I gotta empty this so I can put more stuff in it. And so I empty the folders by listening back to those 200 ideas at a time, usually, or, you know, over the course of doing it for a few days and writing them down into a physical notebook. Then when the notebooks are full, then I type them into the computer. And then that process just keeps continuing. In the meantime, I'm also performing and recording the sets. And if I riff something new in a set, then that goes into the recorder and that goes into the notebook and that goes into the computer. And so the process,
When you go from putting it in from the recorder into the notebook, does it get refined? And then does it get refined even more when it goes into the computer? Or is it mostly just going word for word, the same thing?
That is a good question. I would say probably the answer now is that there's absolutely a refinement process that takes place. Earlier in my career, I think, like before I would even, but when I would put career in quotes, I would say I probably would do more like word for word transference of it, but I would eventually come to, like, part of what I love about the process now is that I, when I'm saying it to begin with, and then, like, you know, some weeks or months later, when I'm writing it with a pen or a pencil, and then some months later when I'm typing it, at every stage, I'm engaging with it, you know, from a different time and via a different, like, mechanism. And I almost, you know, not for every idea, not for every joke, but for many, as I'm transferring it, I'm like, oh, I could also say this or add this or extract this. Or if I don't understand what I was talking about, be like, just edit it or excise it in some way. Though, even if I do think that the idea is not perfect, I'll usually err on the side of continuing to include it and then having, you know, part of the document be like jokes that, you know, get to these eventually if you want to. But as opposed to the ones that I'm like, you know, more moved by and more excited to really develop and dig into. Yeah, so I think
your audio recorder being full reminds me of, I don't know if you've ever heard the Mitch Hedberg joke where he says that sometimes he comes up with a joke while he's in bed at the hotel, and if the pencil's on the other side of the room, then he has to convince himself that it ain't funny.
Yeah, I mean, the way that's a hilarious joke and very resonant, and the way that it manifests for me is, like, for the past few days, with the levels being full or close to full in my recorder. Ordinarily, I would spend a lot of time listening back to sets and then, you know, extracting new ideas from those sets and then putting them into the recorder. But since the recorder is mostly full, I slowed down the queue of, like, listening back for the past few days until now that there's a whole, you know, 200 idea slot, you know, 200 idea folder open. Now I can listen back and be like, oh, we got, you know, dozens more ideas coming down the pike. But I mean, perhaps, I don't know if this could be helpful to others, like, part of the process for me is, like, not really censoring myself, not really, yeah. Like, were if I, there's a book I read by a man named Verlin Klinkenborg, and the book is called Several Short Sentences About Writing, I believe. And one of the things that he says in it is that it's sort of maybe the goal or the job or the, you know, the task or the mission of the writer to notice things and then to notice that you noticed them. Mm. So, you know, classic comedy style, hey, ever noticed, you know, like, whether it be an internal thing or an external thing, whether something about politics or, you know, just dating or pop culture or, you know, your inner life, mental health, whatever, you know, whatever you're noticing, like, part of the job is to notice, and then it's to notice that you're noticing. And so I, who has left the room now, so we can speak honestly about her, and I can tell you that I really love her and everything I said is true. And, like, we have a kind of, you know, joke that I will say everything that I think, and she will think about everything that she says.
Yes.
There are things that, you know, historically, she might have, like, great ideas that she does. Like, it used to be, sometimes she would say something, and if I didn't register it or acknowledge it out loud, she might assume that I, you know, maybe didn't think it was the best thing for whatever reason. Like, if she, but she grew to really, you know, learn that wasn't the case, and that sometimes if she had a really strong feeling about a thought that she had, she's like, I think this is funny. I think this is creative. I think this is unique. Like, if I didn't, you know, outwardly acknowledge it, you know, maybe I was distracted, maybe I was looking at an email, maybe whatever it was that was keeping me from fully engaging with the idea, she's like, more recently has been like, hello, I would like to, like, did you hear this thing I said? I think it's a great idea. And I'd be like, it is a great idea. I'm glad that you, you know, shook me out of my complacency. And so I think that she has, you know, learned to have, you know, greater confidence in her own, you know, abilities and thoughts and ideas. And I, you know, am learning to listen more, you know. And I know that not every idea that I have is going to turn into, like, you know, I literally thousands and thousands of words and pages exist of the ideas that I've had. And part of it now is that I get to, like, kind of go mining them, kind of like panning them for the gold that can exist, and be like, sometimes I will go back, you know, years or months, and be like, what ideas have not been, like, you know, watered, and like just seeds that are going, like, laying, like, ready and waiting. And so that's the thing. Like, in 2006, I'd been doing comedy about 4 years, and I had written a bunch of jokes that I thought were the best jokes I had ever written about the movie Snakes on a Plane. And I was like, I don't know that I'm ever going to write better jokes than these. And I went through, like, a period that felt like a slump. I was like, man, I don't know. And I, like, you know, I still kept coming up with ideas, but nothing felt, not like it was hitting as much, nothing. I was like, ah, maybe this is it. And then, you know, some 6 months later, I had another joke that felt good and did well. And I just realized it took a long time sometimes for a joke to develop, for an idea to, you know, really come into fruition, that I had to, you know, work and wait and be, you know, patient and effortful. And so I think that's something that, you know, maybe other people could take if it resonates, that like you don't have to sit down and write every day. You can, if that's what you want to do. And you can just, like, truly, like, if you have an idea that you think it might be worthwhile, write it down or record it, or, you know, and then eventually, like, later, you know, a lot, I think part of the meticulous process for me is in the reviewing the massive amounts of, like, idea collection or expulsion from my brain that I have engaged with. And I'm just like, here's a lot of stuff. Like, I remember my friend Shane Moss, very funny comedian, when we both started, I remember for me to come up with, like, a new 5 minutes of jokes, I'd have to do, like, one at a time. I'd have to come up with, you know, like, one short line and another short line and another, until eventually I built it up into 5 minutes. And Shane would sometimes just start with a story that was, like, 20 minutes. And he's like, for him to get 5 minutes, he had to whittle down a 20-minute story into the 5 minutes that was, like, the worthwhile stuff that he wanted to really get out. And so, you know, depending who are, you know, are you somebody who needs to listen more, or somebody who needs to, you know, more confidently express what's going on inside you that you really care about more? Are you somebody who, you know, has a lot of stuff and just needs to, you know, whittle it down? Are you somebody who, like, needs to start small and build it up from there? Like, you know, there's no one size fits all, no just one way, but wherever you are, you can start there, which is, you know, sort of a riff on a book that Rini introduced me to from Pema Chodron called Start Where You Are. Like, you can always start, and where you are is the perfect place to start moving forward and grow in whatever way you want, be it creatively or, you know, therapeutically, spiritually, emotionally, physically, if you want to get taller. Yeah, you can do that too.
That's very interesting because, as I've already mentioned, I'm like you in that I say everything that I think. I'm very much the kind of person that some people think talks too much. And yet, when it comes to, like, for example, I did a thesis for honors at university, and it had to be 9,000 to 10,000 words. I had said everything that needed to be said in 3,000 words. And I found that at university in general, that everyone else was having trouble getting down to the word count, and I was having trouble getting up to the word count. And you're saying something similar with how you started with comedy, and yet both of us in everyday life talk a lot. So that's interesting. Anyway.
Yeah.
But we're actually coming.
One more thing about it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just another, you know, concept that Rini introduced into, like, this vocabulary into our experience, that when I'm starting to, like, create a new hour of comedy, let's say, for a new hour, for a new special, a new album, we call it she coined the term, the blooming phase, where I'm just, like, you know, growing and growing and planting seeds and watering them. And it's, you know, just more and more. And then eventually, when it's time to, like, shape it into the final form that will be, you know, recorded and presented or toured first, it's always, you know, always constantly happening. But she calls that, and we call that now, the pruning phase. And kind of both are happening at all times. You know, like, in the beginning, it was like, you know, lots of ideas build up, because, you know, I didn't have trouble, like, coming up with a certain word count. I had trouble coming up with a certain, like, quality joke count, you know? So, like, yeah. You know, and yeah. Same for, I'm sure you could write 10,000 words,
yeah.
But are they yeah. the good quality words that you want? But yeah, I mean, in order to write, you know, a good joke, you have to write probably 100 bad ones or 1,000, and to write a great, you know, piece of writing, a thesis, a book, what have you, you have to write, you know, loads more than, like, almost everybody at some point needs to hopefully do some whittling down as opposed to just adding up. But yeah, at different stages, we might need different motivations and different framings and different aspects.
I'll just quickly ask, is Shane Moss, I don't know, I know of Shane Moss, mostly from all different, mostly probably from your podcast, but anyway, I don't know him personally for sure. Would he be someone who people would think talks a fair amount, or would he be more of a quiet listener type?
I think he is a talker.
Okay, so that doesn't fit my theory that I was thinking. Maybe those of us who, yeah, anyway. But we've actually run out of time. I'm hoping that when I ask you to come on again, that you answer me yes, because I have a lot more to talk to you about. But let's just finish with the last two questions that I've copied from you. Firstly, sure. Is there anything that we talked about that you didn't get to say as much as you wanted to because we went off on a bit of a tangent?
You know, I mean, I appreciate it. It's an honor to hear and receive that question that I'm usually on the other side of. I'll say, I mean, I will be very excited to come on and talk more, because as you may have gleaned from my saying it directly, I do love a good me talking time. And I think I'll say the one thing that we didn't, you know, obviously didn't touch too much, but we kept teasing it, and next time
is 1 hour psychedelics. Of psychedelics, yeah. Yeah. And is there anything that I didn't even know to bring up that would be a glaring omission in a survey of the life and work of Michael Adam Kaplan?
Well, seems like you did a great amount of research. I very much appreciate it. The short answer
I've been doing research on you for about 19 years, or no, maybe 16, 17 years for this episode.
It shows, I honestly, it's my favorite answer. You know, I like it either way. On my show, if somebody's like, actually, I do have something, I'm like, wonderful. I'm happy to receive it. And if somebody's like, no, I think you were really thorough, that makes me feel good in that way. So I will say 100%, you were very thorough. I feel, you know, seen and heard and cared for and respected and honored and flattered. And it's really, I appreciate the kind words of support, and I'm happy to be any part of, you know, the journey that you had in creating this podcast and how you're living your life. I always appreciate hearing from you online, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you. So I'll say, you know, that's my short answer, no, plus all those other words that I said. I think you did a great job and I appreciate you.
Thanks, Mike. And I also will say there's only one time I've been in the same place, the same city as you when you were doing, there's only one time I've been in the same city as you. And I went to a small bar show of yours, and I'll always remember that, guess what? You're sort of, one of your main philosophies in life is be kind. And you were very kind and gave me your drink ticket for that night. For those listeners who love hearing all these things that you have to say, and would even love to hear some of it with a lot more jokes put in as well, where can they find you? How do they find you?
Thank you for asking. So Mike Kaplan is my name, spelled M-Y-Q-K-A-P-L-A-N. And if you search for that wherever, you'll find my albums on all the streaming platforms. You'll find a special on Amazon and on Drybar. You'll find my social media is just at Mike Kaplan, spelled like that everywhere. My newsletter comes out once every week or two for free, and more if you subscribe at mikekaplan.substack.com. My podcast, Broccoli and Ice Cream and The Faucet, you can find on your podcast app of choice. And yeah, mikekaplan.com will have a lot of that too. So pretty much put Mike Kaplan into a search on the internet where you want to find stuff, and you should find the stuff.
Awesome. And you can always find all of my links at jeremywest.net, including a link to every episode of this podcast, and just under that, a link to all books mentioned on this podcast, including all the books mentioned by Mike today. So thank you very much, Mike. Thanks for coming on, and thanks for being kind, and thank you for being you, Michael Adam Kaplan, and for inspiring other people to be more of themselves as well, whether you mean to or not.
I'm happy for that to be whether I mean it or not, but thank you, my friend. It's been a great pleasure.
Thanks. We'll see you next time on Psychedelics, the Psychedelic Hour.
Sounds good. Bye.